Delighted to be joined in the studio by David Daly from Freedom Financials. Good afternoon, David. How are you?
Good afternoon, Eric.
First of all, tell us a little bit of Freedom Financials, what you're all about.
Okay. We're a small financial services company headquartered in Cork City, but I'm a Yall native. So in the last 6 or 7 months, we've sort of had a sub-office in Yall. And we've done a bit of sponsorship for CRY and local clubs. So look, I'm just making myself available as an independent financial advisor. I suppose a lot of people be used to dealing directly with banks who are tied agents of their own products. So I suppose I give a sort of an unbiased view of all financial products who I have agencies with. Yeah. So I can offer mortgages for 5 different lenders. I can offer financial products, investments, pensions from 9 or 10 different lenders. So I suppose that's the
and way I suppose I do. Just on mortgages, is it easier to get mortgages at the moment, or is it still quite difficult?
I suppose the irony of it is easier to get a mortgage, but as house prices increase, people are finding it more difficult, I suppose, for the multiples of their income to match what they need to buy. An example would be the maximum that any bank would give is 3.5 times your joint income. So if there was 2 people earning 50 grand, it'd be 3.5 times that, minus any loan commitments. If you've kids, that'll be deducted,
right,
as well.
Okay.
So it's quite a complicated measurement. There's a thing called demonstrated affordability. Have you a history of savings? Have you any missed payments on your bank details, etc., etc.? So what I would say is it's always good to get sort of independent advice. If you've got a good relationship with your bank, absolutely, it's always a good place to start. But I suppose I'll just start off on what we call first-time buyer mortgages, which would be the most, yep, I suppose, the most popular.
Yep.
A young person or persons looking to get their first mortgage. What every bank will look for is 6 months bank statements. And what they're trying to do, if you know what you're looking for, you can actually get it. You know what sort of a person.
Right, okay.
Yeah, they are by looking at a bank statement.
Yes, yes.
You know where they're eating, you know where they're spending money, you know if they're gamblers, you know if they're not gamblers. So they're trying to get a picture of what sort of person this is. Ultimately,
and obviously there's red flags there for the bank
absolutely.
Looking at it straight away.
One major red flag that has become prominent the last few years is Paddy Power accounts.
Yes.
They don't like to see people with Paddy Power accounts because they're saying these guys are gamblers. You have to remember, all a bank is worried about is, will they get their money back?
Yeah.
Will this guy or this girl have the common sense to pay us back every month and not be gambling and not this type of stuff,
but
as well, you know?
Does that mean if you have a Paddy Power account, for example, is that straight away you're gone?
It's not a 100% no, but if there's a lot of activity, it's a no. Like, they won't penalise you for having a Paddy Power account, and you do one bit, like if you were lodging a 5 or 10 into Paddy Power, there won't be a problem. But if you see someone who's regularly betting every day on Paddy Power,
yeah,
it's an absolute red flag. And that's not to say that someone doesn't have enough money in their account, or it's just one of their red flags. And it's, I suppose, they're entitled to have as many red flags as they want. So it's little things like that. So you may not be ready to have a mortgage today, but what I would say to you, there's a couple of things you put in place ready to go for your mortgage.
Yeah.
So you keep your bank account nice and clean. You don't miss any payments. You don't go into unauthorized overdrafts. You show a history of savings. For example, if you're going to be borrowing for a mortgage and it's going to cost you 900 quid a month, they'd like to see that you're already prepared to use using that 900 quid,
yes,
in savings,
yes,
or rent.
Yes.
They like to see that. They also want to see, obviously, where you're working. Is it permanent? How long you've been there? They can take into consideration commission. They can take in overtime if it's guaranteed, stuff like that. So, you know, always sort of work your numbers first and then work towards what you need to do. But it's mainly 6 months bank accounts. They'll run what they call an Irish credit bureau search. And what that is designed to do is to see, okay, have you had credit in the past?
Right.
What was your previous form on credit?
And I know that there is quite a lot of people that would have had bad experiences in the last number of years. How long is that there on your record for?
Technically speaking, every credit file should be blanked after 7 years, but that's only 7 years from the last transaction. So I'll give you an example. If you took out a loan 14 years ago and you've been sort of tipping away at it and not paying it and et cetera, et cetera, it's the day the bank draw a line under it. The 7 years start then.
Really? All
yes,
right.
Not the first day. is the last thing.
Yeah.
So what happens, and unfortunately this comes up quite a lot. People come up and say, I say, look, have you ever had any bad credit? 15 years ago. But sort of, so then we say we run an ICB check or we put an application in, and next all of a sudden it pops up. And it's not so much that it's I'm not saying that banks aren't prepared to forgive certain things, because you know what happened the last 10 years hopefully never happened again. It was awful yeah. Right, but what banks don't like is someone saying that they never had an issue when they had. So first step at the bank is you've just lied to us,
yeah.
You know, we're not dealing with you, you know, sort of thing. So what I always tell people from day one is you can run your own ICB. So if you go to icb.ie, it costs £6. You put in all your addresses, you put in your date of birth, and what happens is within 2 days you'll get a report back from the Irish Credit Bureau, and it'll show you if there's anything on there either that should be on there or shouldn't be on there, more importantly. Because if there is something on there that shouldn't be on there, then you need to get that off immediately, because it will affect your ability to credit.
And what kind of things would you be talking about that shouldn't be on there?
All it's going to be on there is, Eric, is that, okay, for example, you have a Bank of Ireland loan, and what it'll do is it'll show a tick if you paid every month you paid, and it'll give a number if you missed any payments. So it just gives a record of that sort of that loan and how you performed with it. It'll give you a balance, how much you took out originally and what the balance is today. So they know that if you were good with the loan, if you didn't pay it or you did pay it. So it's always important to get your ICB report first, because I've had situations where people have said to me they've had no credit, and I put an application for a bank, and it comes back that they did a loan. It goes, oh yeah, I thought that was sorted.
Yeah.
So immediately you're on the back foot straight away.
Yeah.
So as a natural course of action, anyone who comes to me, we do an ICB search before I ever do anything for them, because there's no point.
Yeah, and I suppose, first of all. If someone is thinking down along the line of buying a house, and you're talking like within 4, 5, 6 years, they really need to be getting their accounts and in order.
Like the criteria, we'll say using one person as an example. So you're a PAYE worker. You're
a Joe Soap.
You're a Joe Soap, right? You're working anywhere. You're just getting your taxes deducted for you during the PAYE system. They'll want 3 months. Pay slips from your employer. They'll want a salary cert. What the salary cert outlines is what is your tenure, what is your position. Are you permanent, are you part time, are you temporary, whatever it is. And it will outline what your salary is, how much of your money is guaranteed, if you're on commission, if you're on overtime, this type of stuff, if there's an end to your contract. So that's the starters. Three months pay slips, a salary cert, a P60 from last year, 6 months bank statements, and ID, passport, and utility license. That's your sort of minimum criteria to do into anything. If you're self-employed, then the minimum criteria is two years of accounts, signed accounts.
Yeah.
And 6 months bank statements, and
like
depending who you go to, you might have notes of assessment from the revenue. They'll want to see how much tax you paid, etc., etc. So there, certain lenders are better with certain types of borrowers.
Right, okay.
So, for example, the likes of Pepper, they're sort of new onto the market on the domestic side of things. They understand self-employed people better than most banks. They take into consideration pension payments into private pension accounts. They'll use that as affordability. So you might get more, you might be lent more with Pepper than you would say with like the Bank of Ireland.
Right.
If you're a first time buyer and you know you've got a very good case and you're a strong case, the likes of PTSB will give you 2% cash back. So as soon as you draw down your mortgage, if you borrow 200,000, they'll give you 4 grand back straight away into your account. That's very attractive for somebody, we'll say, who's buying a house and they need money to furnish it.
Yes.
To get it ready, to paint it. KBC the same. But what you also have, I think more importantly, is remortgaging is now back, whereas before it wasn't, because a lot of people were negative equity. You were stuck with your mortgage.
Yes,
you might be stuck in a rate that you mightn't be happy with, but remortgage, you know, is back, and you're being offered attractive rates to move your mortgage. You're being offered, for example, all your costs will be covered, and you might get a few bob extra out of it. You might be able to remortgage, maybe to do up the house, to pay off short term debts, stuff like that. So the mortgage market is back again. It's not perfect. I think myself, they're going to have to relax the rules on the multiples of income,
yeah,
because people just can't afford. Like, Yall, strangely enough, is one of the better places to buy because house prices are so low.
Relatively cheap. You go up to Middleton, you can add another 100,000 onto a house.
Exactly. So Yall is actually quite a good, but the problem you have, Eric, and I could have five or six first time buyers who I have what we call approval and principles for. They're chasing the same houses around
the
town.
Yes,
yes. And that's the problem. You have then, we'll say, once you go up beyond that 140, 160 bracket, you now have a different type of buyer that doesn't seem to be able to get the money. That's why the sort of higher end houses aren't moving as quickly.
Right.
Because people just can't get the money for
them. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All the sort of, as I always said, there was more money made in the recession than there was in the boom times, because all the good, if it was property bought up in Yall, 30, 40 grand, yeah, three bed
really,
houses.
Really, cheap. Yeah.
Really, really cheap for guys with cash because you couldn't get a mortgage. So look, it is frustrating, but what I would say is that, look, stick with it. It sometimes might be good to sort of to buy a house maybe that needs a small bit of work. Most people want to turnkey, want to walk in, they're not sort of don't have the time to do it.
Yeah.
But if you have the skills or the family and friends to help you, that might be an option for you. That's always a good sort of bet. But I suppose with first time buyers, the maximum they can lend is 90% of what you're purchasing. So for example, if you're buying a house for 100 grand, the maximum they'll give you is 90 grand.
Yeah, yeah.
So what you have is you need that 10 grand, you'll need your stamp duty, which is a percent, so that'll be another 1,000. Your solicitor is going to cost you 1,500 quid. So there's probably 13 or 14 grand there that you need to buy a house.
You still need a lot of saving if you're buying any kind
of
house.
Exactly. It's quite difficult to borrow, or sorry, to
gather that kind of money.
Gather that type of money, absolutely. Especially when you're working and you're probably renting. Like, I'll give an example. A three-bed semi in Yall now, Eric, rent-wise, are probably going to cost you 9 or 950. That's just the way it's gone because there's a shortage of rental properties in Yall. A similar mortgage for that house at 90% would probably cost you 600 quid.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. Like, when
you
think
of it. You've got people who can get, you know, they're struggling on the rent.
But they could generally afford that mortgage.
Get the mortgage.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very frustrating, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But as you say, like, it's something that will have to be relaxed. And I suppose money has never been as cheap. I know that there's talking the ECB rate might be raising. They might be rising maybe 12 months down the line. Yeah. We're looking at before it goes. But
it's they've been talking about that for many, many years. But it's been a very effective tool, the European Central Bank rate. To, you know, to curb inflation. Like, it was all really designed for France and Germany to control inflation, but because obviously the financial crisis, they're trying to give the economies a chance to go, but they know themselves raising interest rates too quick would be a disaster as well.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a huge problem. It's not something that would put me off buying a house if I'm thinking about higher interest rates, because if you're not buying, you're renting.
But and the flip side of that, then with the interest rates so low, anyone that has money, they're not really investing it, are they?
No, they're not. What you'll find is people with money bought property because there's no money in deposit accounts, unless you're willing to sort of tie up your money for 3, 4 years, 5 years in investments to get a return. You're not like you have to take a risk with your money. It's like risk reward.
If you sit down with a financial advisor,
first thing he'll say to you is, okay, how much access do you need to this money? And you'll say, well, I need to get at it next week. If I have to, you'll say, well, there's no point putting it anywhere other than a bank deposit account.
If you're willing,
as a fellow says, if you're willing to take a risk with it, if you're willing to sort of, absolutely. There are funds out there that will give you the 4, 5, 6% every year, but you must be willing to sort of to forget about it.
Plus, for a few years. Plus, there is a higher risk with those as well, obviously.
There's always a higher risk where you get the reward. But I suppose it's a calculated risk in the sense that all you can do, we can't look into a crystal ball and say, right, these funds are going to do well in the future, because any number of things could happen.
Yeah.
So what happens is the only thing you can look at is the previous performance of the fund.
Yeah.
And who's running it and what type of reputation do they have, and, you know, You're never going to go into a fund and it's just going to be worth nothing overnight. Even when 9/11 happened, a lot of people lost money overnight, but it was like 20-30%. It sounds like an awful lot, but Christ, it could have been an awful lot worse.
Yeah.
So it's never going to happen that you're going to lose all your money in a managed fund. The only time you ever lose money, if you give it to someone, And he says, yeah, I'll sort that out for you. If you're in a structured environment, a regulated environment, you should never do that. That'll never happen. Even the high-risk funds, that'll never happen.
Net is a scam. And just finally, pensions. What way are pensions now?
Pensions, there's been a lot of talk about what way they were going to sort of go at pensions, because pensions are very lucrative. I say lucrative, it's if you have the pensions. It's very attractive because they'll give you tax relief at your highest rate. So if you're a 40% taxpayer, for every 100 euros you put into a pension, the government is giving you back 40 to put into it. Okay, so it's 140 you're putting into it as opposed to that. So it's very attractive for a number of different people. People who are high earners, people who are company directors that can shift the profits from a company into a thing. But it's very hard, even as a financial advisor, I'd find it very difficult to sit down with a normal person who's on 20% tax rate to tell them to start a private pension fund for themselves. Because all you're doing is, it's tax, you get tax relief on the way in, but you're taxed on the way out. So it's tax deferment.
Yes.
I think personally, it's only a good thing. And again, I could get slated for this, but I can only tell you what I feel and what advice I would give to my son here, who's here with me today. If he asked me the advice, it's unless an employer is putting money in with you, there's no point. I really, at 20%, you're just not going to build up enough funds.
Yeah.
You know, for it to be worth your while, and get the, as you said, you're going to be taxed on the way out at 20% anyway.
Well, it's nice to get an honest assessment
as a fellow says, I could sell pensions day and night if you want, but I certainly won't. If it's not the right thing to do, I wouldn't do it.
Okay, and so what else kind of other services are we, like, we have the mortgages, the pensions,
we have
the
mortgage
savings.
Pensions, we have, I suppose, look, it's like anything else, another popular thing I find with people who are looking, who are worried about, I suppose, the cost of education for their kids.
Yep.
We have savings plans, risk-free savings plans that you sort of put money away and you build up a bit of a fund for college and stuff like that, because, you know, just the cost of it is crazy,
it is expensive.
So we've savings funds, we do income protection. If somebody's worried about, I suppose, what happens if they can't work due to accident and illness, there are protections out there that will give you a monthly salary until the day you retire. You can get tax relief at your highest rate on them. So those type of things are important. If you're the only breadwinner in the house, and if your income is the only thing that's keeping the roof over your head and food on the table, it's always important to look at things like income protection.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, if you're out in long-term disability, you'll get 11 or 12 grand off the state. And that's it. That's not going to be enough to maintain your lifestyle. It's not going to be enough to get your kids the education that you want. So things like that. But everything costs money, Eric. It's like... Yeah. You know, if we could afford everything, we'd have it.
Yes,
it's about
exactly,
prioritising.
Yeah. And I suppose in the last number of years, I can imagine a lot of people cut back on all these things because they weren't priority.
Unfortunately, a lot of people cut back on life insurance.
Yeah.
I've come across a few cases where people have, you know, due to financial constraints, they got rid of life insurance, and subsequently a partner died, putting more pressure on them. So look, it's like... There's other things to give up before these vital things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I would prioritise stuff like that. But look, as I said, if people can afford them again, like life insurance, depending on your medical condition, is very, very cheap at the moment.
Yes.
It's highly competitive. It really is. So they're cutting each other's throats at the moment to get you into life insurance.
And I suppose, like anything, the younger you start any of these things... The cheaper
it's
is the, by far.
It's when you think you don't need it is the time to get it, you know, and it's the cheapest way to do it. It's, it's after an event people want it and they can't get it. Who's going to, when you're 18, you think you're invincible, exactly.
Well, David, look, that's all we've got time for. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us this afternoon.
Thanks,
it's very enlightening. It's nice to get an honest opinion on stuff for a change when it comes to financials.
I know,
definitely. So hopefully we'll talk again. Thank you very much indeed. Cheers.